Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. Cullum O'Mungoyne here, 0845 783333 if you're calling from the north or abroad, 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApps and 51551 for your texts. Fidelma, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Cullum.
How are you keeping?
I'm having a rent.
And
I'm having a big rent now on the Republic of Ireland. Over 1,000 individuals sentenced to jail time last year got as far as the jail and were sent home. Now, that's 1,000 prisoners, and that would be 2,000 police officers, Garda, to bring them up, plus all the victims, minimum of 1,000 victims, upwards. And I think that the government is allowing it to happen is criminal.
Now,
that's my rant.
And it should be pointed out, you were a victim of burglary.
Oh, I was. I was.
Hmm. When did it happen?
It happened in 2019. And all I can say is the guards were exceptional. Couldn't have been better. And my problem now is they weren't caught. The people who burgled my house weren't caught. But if they were caught, they'd have been sentenced and they'd have been brought to court and they'd have got a tap in the hand and sent home. And what I feel, they're sent home. Their social welfare isn't stopped. Their money isn't stopped out of their salary if they're working. I paid. I had, as I thought, good security in my house. I had to improve it. My insurance went up. I did nothing. And they say crime doesn't pay. But really and truly, it does. It does pay.
Now, the Irish Prisoners Officers Association, for anyone who didn't hear it on the news, and this is what upset you this morning.
Oh, I couldn't believe it.
This is where this figure of 1,000 people not serving a jail sentence came out. The association president, Tony Power, told that conference in Galway that anyone serving less than 8 months for a non-violent crime is getting a temporary release. But, I mean, the description of, you know, the likes of burglary as a non-violent crime, as somebody who's had their house burgled, does that description match your experience?
No. Now, saying that, when it happened, it was drama, fierce drama. We had CSI, we had the whole lot down in the house. But that was fine. But 6 months later, it hit me, and I had to go to the doctor. So we are victims. And it just wasn't me. It was my husband and my children. When you're talking about 1,000 individuals, prisoners, you're not including the 1,000, maybe up to 10,000 victims. And I feel, I can't understand. It's the waste of money the government are doing, are not spending on the right things.
Can you take us through, maybe, you know, bring us back to the burglary? You were out of the house and you arrived back. Walk us through the house when you arrived back and how you felt at the time.
We went down to a launch of a book at about 7:15, and we were home at 7:45. And we came back, the porch door was open, but I wouldn't mind that because sometimes that wouldn't be, but the front door was open. And my husband said, I think we've been burgled. And I said, don't be stupid. So I went straight down to the bedroom, and we have a chest of drawers in the bedroom, and all the drawers were out on the floor, everything turned out. We had documentation over the bed. Everything was down there. My daughter was getting married that year, and every time I got a fiver, I had a tin down in the bedroom. I had €1,000 in the tin. That was gone. My jewellery was gone.
And what kind of jewellery was in
the
box?
My engagement ring, which was a major piece of jewellery, and other jewellery. I'm with my husband since, we're married 51 years, so I had a lot of bits and pieces over the 51 years.
Bits that were there to mark occasions and significant milestones in your relationship.
Oh, 100%. But that's not taking into, like, these people got away with it, and they're still getting away with it. Like, I feel so sorry for the guards. I think for a guard to arrest someone and bring them to jail, and then for the perpetrator to walk past them out the gate and home. Nothing. No slap in the hand. Nothing. I just feel, I find it, like this morning, I know I'm changing the subject now completely. This morning I heard on the radio that they're looking for somebody to do the houses. I feel we have a minister for housing. We have a huge department behind him, all paid exceptional salaries, and they can't run a housing department. Like when I hear the Minister for Justice saying, what he's saying, it just,
well, he says
the mind boggles.
Yeah, he says that the programme for government is promising 1,500 additional prison places, that they've upped the annual budget to 525 million, and the capital budget, that's the budget for buildings in prison,
has
almost doubled to 53 million.
Did you ever hear the expression, Cullum, that a promise not kept is a lie?
Now, there are, you'll be aware of the context of this. There's more people in prison than ever before. There were 5,344 prisoners in custody on Wednesday, and there's only space for 4,666 people, meaning that 678 people had to be crammed into cells, and there were 358 people sleeping on mattresses on the floor. And the prison officers are afraid that these conditions mean people can't take exercise, they can't do the workshops, they can't engage in education, and there's a risk of violence in the prison.
Well, what do they want? What do the prisoners want? Ensuite bedrooms? Big screen televisions? Sky Sports? A prisoner is a prisoner for that reason. Not for to be pampered.
And to go back to your own experience, I mean, you obviously you were shocked. The 1,000 euro was missing. The jewellery was missing. But you said that, I suppose, the traumatic impact of it, the shock really only kicked in 6 months later.
6 months later. Mm. 6 months later.
In what way?
I couldn't sleep. I had to go to the doctor. And it was all down to the break-in. I would wish it. Now, to some people it's nothing. But to me, we felt our house was secure. Our house, we had a porch in front. We had, was it 5 locks on the front door? We assumed that was it. I had to go to the expense then of getting a burglar alarm system in. I had to go to the expense of my insurance went up. Like, I did nothing, but I had to pay.
And do you have even a notion of a ballpark cost of, you know, what the alarm cost?
I'm not going down
cost?
That road.
Right.
Oh, the alarm system, I can't remember.
Right.
That's going back.
For the installation of an alarm, it has to be done by a qualified electrician.
Oh,
it's not
be.
A cheap
it
process. Yeah,
no,
and they have to be registered with the private security authority.
Yeah, so I know all that.
They have another cost involved as well.
That.
So it's not any old job.
No, it's not. But I thought my house was secure. Like, 5 locks isn't enough in any door. Every house now has to have security. Extra security.
And how long did it take? You know, obviously, you were actually unaware of the impact of the burglary until 6 months down the road. But how long do you think it took before you had recovered, if you've recovered from it?
Oh, I have recovered, no problem. I don't know. That was, 2019? It took me a while, I'd say. It took me the bones of a year to get over. Every now and then I'd get flashback. Now, it was exciting for the children because, as they called it, the CSI came and they were adjusting for Prince and they were doing this, that and the other.
Right.
And all that at the time was kind of took my mind off what had actually happened.
Mm.
But after that, downhill. So that's my story and that's my rant today.
Mm. And, you know, it's... It's clearly had. I know you say you're over it, but there's an obvious passion in your voice there. That and you listened to the news this morning and
I got mad. Hmm. Like, I heard it last night, and I just said to my husband, I said, "Did you hear that?" And then it was on the radio this morning, and he was telling me a story that this American couple. No, this is not my story. It was his story. This American couple were on holidays up in Sligo, and they stopped and to go a walk around. And their car was broken into. And the person was caught. And the person had 250 convictions.
Now, when you look, I mean, I know you have I know you don't have a great deal of sympathy for people who find themselves inside the walls of a prison, but even to look at the long-term aim of a prison, that people are supposed to go in there, they're maybe supposed to, you know, avail of workshops and education and that kind of thing, so that in the long term, they're not finding themselves back in prison, that they'll have other choices when they get outside the walls. And overall, even if you were to look at it only from a public spending point of view, that the more you stop that cycle of people going back into prison and the better prison system you have, overall you reduce the cost to the state. Do you accept that?
No.
No.
I'd like to know the percentage of those who go on the straight and narrow when they come out of prison. I don't know the percentage. I think you're in prison for a reason. Not to be minded and looked after and pampered.
Right.
You do something wrong, you pay for it.
And punishment is one side of prison, but then, you know, rehabilitation is the other side of prison, and to try and break that cycle.
I don't know, do they? I don't know. I can't answer that.
It's a kind of a catch-22, isn't it, though? I mean, if you have an overcrowded prison system and you can't put those things in place, I suppose we'll never know.
I won't go down that road here because I'm not qualified to go down that road with you. I'm only telling you about my experience and how cross I was when I saw the 1,000 people, that 1,000 prisoners sent home. Like, the guards had to bring them from the court to the jail. That's a day's work for them. For two guards, not one guard, two guards. I know there is no way I would encourage my grandchildren to go into the guards. No way.
Right. Although, you know, people who work in the guards, they will say it's challenging. They say the terms and conditions are challenging as well. And the recruitment's not without its difficulties, but it's a kind of a vocational career for the people who do it.
I don't know. I can't answer that. I don't know.
And based on your own experience, I mean, look, you know, when somebody in a family is suffering, you said, you know, you couldn't sleep. You ultimately had to, you know, go to the doctor and try and get some resolution to that. Is there an impact on the wider family? I mean, people were watching you suffering in your own family. Did it cause stress in the wider family, do you think?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I can't answer that either. Now, I was upset and that was it. I suppose it upset my husband as well. But kids are kids and they get on with their lives and I don't know.
And what age were they when it happened?
Oh, God, they were all... my youngest was getting married. So, kind of, they were all able enough and big enough.
Right. And all of those fivers, you know, incrementally that you'd put by in that tin, €1,000 in the tin, just gone.
Oh, it was just... I loved doing it. It was kind of... It might sound silly now, but they were for little extras for the wedding. And you don't miss a fiver. You kind of... I didn't miss the fiver. When I put it in, any time I'd get a fiver, I'd put it into the tin. And that was it. And to see that gone. And I know I owed my son €20 and I had it stuck on the notice board. And that was taken. And I had pennies and things. There was things around that were... It was afterwards that I realised, that's gone. I didn't realise it at the time. But kind of you go through things afterwards and they were missing.
And was that one of the things that kind of maddened you in a way, that bit by bit by bit by bit you'd saved up all of this and then somebody else who just came into the house and
came in and... But you see, they're getting their full whack financially. They're getting their social welfare or they're getting their salary. Nothing is stopped out of that. And they'll say, so they can't afford to stop their money out of their salary. But people can't afford to be robbed either.
Well, I mean, we should point out that anyone who goes to prison does have any state benefits stopped to them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, they do. If they serve a custodial sentence, if people are on temporary release, I'm not sure of the situation there. But
I know these people weren't in prison. They got off straight away. So I presume they got their full whack of their social welfare or their salary. Because we can't say it's all social welfare.
If they were never caught, we don't know who did it.
We don't know who they were or what they are. And that goes for all the prisoners. We don't know who they are or what they are. Mm. I don't know. It was just the initial shock when I heard 1,000 were let go at the front door. And that's 1,000 prisoners. And I'd say a minimum of 5,000 victims impacted on that.
And Camille, I mean, like, obviously the engagement ring was is something you'd keenly feel the loss of, because that's the beginning of a whole new chapter in your life, and you have memories associated, obviously, with when that ring was handed over and the important question that that accompanies that ring. But are there any other bits of jewellery that every so often you get a pang of regret when you think about it being gone?
No, it was just that.
Just that one. Mm. What was it like?
Solitaire. It's beautiful. That's it. Now I'm going to go for me, because I must go and collect my grandchildren from school.
Okay. All right.
And thank you for listening to my rant today.
Well, thanks very much for coming on and for giving it the perspective of somebody who's affected by this. Kevin O'Rourke, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Colm. How are you? Sorry, I was just taking off speaker. No, I just sent in a text. I was wondering whatever happened to Torrington Hall. I thought that was being built as the new big prison to take these prisoners. It seems strange that I didn't hear what the minister said. They were whatever I can gather. These prisoners are getting out after 8 months. But instead of that, we wasted millions or buying land to build a prison to keep them in. So I just wondering whatever happened to it. Does anybody know?
Well, it was still having money spent on it, because there was 114,000 spent on the Thornton Hall site in the last 3 years, as reported in early February by the investigative reporter Ken Fox. So the state paid about 30 million for Thornton Hall site around 2004, 2005. And the most recent valuation on that land was 6.5 million. But apparently the Irish Prison Service spends around €40,000 a year for its upkeep. That's where it's at the moment.
So it's done nothing in 15, 20 years. And so instead of it being what it was bought for, it's a case of wasted money and lack of vision.
Well, I'll run you through the cost. It cost 29 million in 2005, and then according to the figures that were obtained by Ken Fox, who is stock in trade, he tends to look into state expenditure by means of Freedom of Information requests. They spent the breakdown between 2022 and 2024. They 36,000 was spent on gas network costs. 28,000, a further 28,000 was spent on electricity supply to ensure power to the main house on the land and for security systems. 1,600 spent on a site survey on the boundary of the state's land holding. 4,800 on water charges and a site valuation report. And a site valuation report separately cost about 14,000. And the 14,000 told them that the site wasn't worth 29 million, it was worth 6.5 million. Then there were maintenance costs of 27,000 to repair the boundary and perimeter and for security. There was a digital security bill of 2,400 for remote access to a CCTV system, etc., etc., etc. So,
I mean, in this day and age, we talk about lack of housing for people. I mean, could it not be redeveloped into something else if they're not going to actually build what they were supposed to build on it? I mean, it's an extraordinary waste of money that seems to have gone under the radar. And I don't understand.
Well, a two-year licence agreement was signed last year for use of the 30 acres for provision of accommodation for international protection applicants, and the Irish Prison Service, who retain ownership of it, said the site remains of strategic interest to the state and the Irish Prison Service has a duty to secure and maintain the site at Thornton Hall, and there's apparently a protected structure on the site. So that's the status of Thornton Hall that was acquired for 30 million back in 2005.
So it's never going to be developed. I mean, everybody seems to have a say in what it should be used for, but nobody can actually make a decision on what to do with it. It's an awful waste of money, and every year now it's accumulating, and we're doing... Now, I know there's people out that live in that area that are objecting to it, they're entitled to their objections, but either do something with it or sell it to a private agency to put houses on. But my main problem was that when I heard the minister coming on, and this has been on for, maybe three governments, that they're coming on and saying, instead of developing a site that was built, that was bought to be a new prison, well, I'll tell you what, we let the prisoners out instead. It's just unbelievable the waste of money that goes on in this country day after day after day, instead of, can anybody in government simply make a decision and stick to it and do it?
No, government says 525 million is it's increased the annual budget, I think, has gone up by almost 200 million since from about 5 years ago. There was the capital budget was just short of doubled to provide for accommodation, and there's a commitment in the programme for government for 1,500 prison places. That's what a government representative might say if they were talking to you.
You know, the government said last year, I know that they're in and they said 40,000 houses will be built. That was found to be untrue. But they have this wonderful, wonderful piece of land that they could do something with and actually do what they say they're going to do.
Right.
And it just, we just do not, it's an incredible country to live in for a waste of money. It really, and somebody, I know Ken Fox is a very good journalist, but I'd love to see somebody go up to the Minister for Justice and say, what are you going to do? Are we going to spend the next 20 years in limbo? I know that land and I've seen the railings around it. And I'm wondering, what's the CCTV for? Is it to keep people out or to keep people in? It's just an amazing waste. Do you not, does anybody else wonder why we waste all this money? Hmm. It's incredible. Build houses or build a prison, but do something with it.
Okay.
And get somebody to ask the authorities, what are they going to do? Because I'm tired of listening to the waste of money.
All right, well, you've asked aloud on air, Kevin, so thanks for calling in with that. Dr. Mary Honan, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
You were listening to Fidelma, yes, there.
I was. I didn't know her name. I got the end near to the end of the conversation, but I couldn't agree with her more. I've been broken into several times when my parents were alive, and twice since they died. But it's not a victimless crime in any way, shape or form. I had just, as an only child of an only child who had lost both her parents, and suddenly you're broken into and everything that reminds you of them and all that you have left of them is taken without any concern whatsoever. And no consideration. I'm fortunate I got 90% of it back, thank
you
God.
Did you?
Thank God. Well, I got 90% of it back, I'd say about 2 days later. The Gardaí turned up at college where I was and showed me a bag of jewellery, and most of it, 90% of it was mine. And it was tied around one of my long chains. But it
when was that,
away.
Mary?
Oh, it was, I'm thinking, 1990.
Right.
No, it wasn't. It was...
Oh, don't worry about the exact date. Yeah.
1995.
Okay.
1995. But the point I'm making is it is certainly not a victimless crime, because even if you're not inside in the house, which I wasn't on that occasion, it was 1 o'clock in the day and I came home. My whole house was ransacked. My dog was sitting on the couch that was upturned, furniture thrown around the place, presses opened, my jewellery box empty. It was the first thing I ran for, and as an only child, I had a lot of jewellery, and so had my mother.
Do you remember your reaction when you saw the empty jewellery box?
You know, I said it to a friend. We're driving here, and I said, my first reaction when I looked was, I didn't know, it was surreal. I didn't know what was happening. I was looking around the room at this utter chaos, and my little West Highland Terrier sitting on the upturned couch. And it was absolutely like a surrealist painting. I'm there, I'm looking at my whole life up. It actually was a metaphor for how I was actually feeling at that particular moment anyway, that my whole life was turned upside down.
And was anything broken, Mary? Was any damage done in the house?
No, things were just pulled out. They knew exactly what they wanted. They upturned couches, obviously looking for money, looking for jewellery. They grabbed the jewellery, and they were obviously very small because they came in a small window I had left open at the back of the sitting room. And that's how they had to have been small. And they got the whole lot, necklaces, bracelets, jewellery, my grandmother's engagement ring, my mother's engagement ring, my grand-aunt's engagement ring, my grandfather's jewellery, everything gone. And there's a lot I didn't get back, but I got the most important pieces.
Right. Did you get the engagement rings back?
Luck. I got the engagement rings back, and they were all tied onto, and someone else's jewellery was tied as well onto my necklace, and they were hanging off it, and the guards gave it to me in a plastic bag. But it's the trauma, it's the absolute, like, you just don't know. And I had no one to turn to because I had no family.
You were living on your own, were you?
I was living on my own, and my, as I say, I was an only child of an only child. And I have great neighbours now, but I think I was so shocked I didn't even call my neighbours.
And when the guards call out, you know, and they survey the scene and they, you know, try for fingerprints and everything else, at some point they leave and you're left with the chaos around you and you have to begin tidying it up. I mean, do you remember where you were when, or I suppose how you felt as you began to clean up your house after all of this? When did the sorrow or the anger begin to kick in?
I'm not sure. All I know is that when they were gone, it felt almost like you were grieving all over again. Instead of now, I had been grieving for my parents, and then now I'm grieving for the loss of everything that I had, that I treasured, that reminded them or reminded me of them. Everything that my mother absolutely loved was her jewellery and her mother's jewellery, and suddenly that's gone, and it's like you're once again, the grief starts to come back, and it's probably
why, because you'd lost a bit of a connection to them again, was it?
I had lost everything, all that I had that reminded me that I could look at, and every time I looked at that, I thought, that's my mother's, that's my grandmother's. My mother adored, she was an only child as well, and her mother's jewellery was so precious to her. And now I'm after losing it. And finally, when she trusted me with her jewellery, and that it's gone after all these years of being in the family.
So is there a bit of a sense of, and you know, it's clearly the fault of the burglars, and you know, but at some level, yeah, was there a guilt or a shame that perhaps you felt
was.
You'd let the family down by not being an adequate custodian of the family jewels?
That's exactly it. I felt not only have I lost my parents, but I've lost what she valued so much in life was her mother's jewellery and my father's engagement ring that he bought in England for her. He was English, and he was really quiet, and we were very close. And suddenly, everything that he had bought her was gone. Everything that she had valued was gone, and it was like the whole grieving process all over again. And people don't think that. They think, I'll go in and I'll take some jewellery. And, you know, you were talking about, I think what really made me ring up was when you said people go in for rehabilitation and they go to college. And I'm a very compassionate person, and I'm all for people doing well in life. But I had to drag myself out of grief and try and go back to college and make something of my life. I had to do my degree, my master's and my PhD, all without a halfpenny from the government for anything, because they had made a mistake and I was 2 days short of the allocated time to get a grant, mature students grant, and they took it off me. And I had to sign off and every from social welfare and sign back on again in the summer, and back off again when I was going back to college. It was horrific, those years that I spent from the day my parents died, from the time they died to the time I finished my PhD. And I look at people and I think, maybe I'd have been better off if I had robbed a bank or something. I'd be in now and have had all of that paid for on the back of the government,
right,
and on the back of back of other people's misery.
Right. Well, I'm sure you'd never dream of that, but I suppose it gives people an idea of the depths of anger to which, you know, that you were feeling.
Well, you know, I've never been in trouble in my life. I've never taken even as much as a sweet as a child. I had a very strict disciplinarian childhood. But you think to yourself, you know, people are going in and they have 3 square meals, which is only right. They're human beings. But there's people on the street who haven't a halfpenny. You know, and there's people struggling to get through colleges, and that, like me, and they're on their own, and somebody goes in and they get their
Square
meals and their education paid for.
And you know, every piece of jewellery that's handed over in a family like that, there's a story associated with every piece of jewellery. I mean, did your mother pass on this jewellery to you while she was alive? Were you aware of how she'd acquired it all, or did you inherit it all when she died?
My mother was a storyteller, and she was, as I say, she was an only child. Her mother died when she was 18. Her father died when she was 14. So she was very deeply religious, and she loved her mother's jewellery, and she lost it when I was a child. A friend of mine was playing with it and brought it home with her plane. And my mum was absolutely traumatised at the thoughts that her mother's ring was gone, only for it turned up. And it was just so ironic that when she died and I got this 3-ruby ring, I lost it and it turned up. And I just thought, this ring just keeps turning up. And it's almost like history repeating itself. And, you know, she was just so... and then she had her aunt's rings. Her aunt had 5 sons, hated jewellery, had beautiful jewellery and gave it all to my mother. So it was there forever in my house.
Right.
And suddenly she's gone and the jewellery is gone. It was like I was being punished.
And is that the only time you've experienced robbery?
No, I was broken into. We were broken into when my parents were alive while we were asleep. And they smashed a window again. And we didn't get anything that time.
And you weren't woken up.
No, they didn't wake us up. They just, all 3 of us were fast asleep. And when I woke up, the only thing really of significance, they stole food, and they stole the ham out of the oven that she'd cooked the night before. And she said, well, they must have been hungry. But they stole a necklace out of my handbag. I was dancing in the World Dancing Championships the next day, and I took the necklace off, put it in a bag, and the next thing I realised, oh my God, my necklace, and I went and it was gone. And but we never got that back. And
right. What kind of dancing was it?
Irish.
All right. How did you get on Irish in the World dancing. Championships?
Well, I qualified every year for it the first age group is under 11. It's been my life. I was principal dancer in Bunratty Castle for 14 years. And it was my life. I travelled the world with it, promoting dance in Irish and Ireland. It was my world. And then my world came crashing down on the 14th of January, 92, and again on the 14th of May, 93, you know, when they both died. And, you know, and then I was broken into. It just felt like, you know, I need to, the universe needs to stop punishing me.
Right.
And that's the way it felt when I was broken into. This was the last straw. You know, and people don't realise that. They think it's just a victimless crime. But it's anything but, because you don't know what's going on in a person's life at that particular moment when everything is taken again.
Right. Well, Mary, look, I'm glad that 90% of it was recovered, and condolences. I can obviously still hear that there is still some grief there over 30 years on. So
it never goes. It never goes. It never goes.
Well, thanks.
It's omnipresent.
Well, thanks for coming on and sharing your experience with us. We'll take a break. We're back in a minute.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Cullum O'Mungoyne here, 087 484 8888 for your WhatsApp. Shun, good afternoon to you.
You good.
Dia Smurgovich, thanks very much for calling in. You like our other callers, Mary and Fidelma, you've been the victim of a burglary.
I have, yeah. In 2022, my house was broken into, short window of time. The burglars used, I was absent from the house from 5 until about 6:15. And my house was broken into, broken through a sitting room window, came in, possibly went directly upstairs, went to my jewellery box, and they were just looking for jewellery. And they were very specific. They left the pearls. They just wanted gold. And unfortunately, I had my father's All-Ireland hurling medal in the jewellery box on a chain. Gahi de Quayre, he played for Waterford in 1948. And Waterford hurling medals are very, very precious. We don't have that many in the county of Waterford. And they're very, very precious to us. But it was very precious to us as a family. And I was the custodian of the medal. So I feel very guilty still, nearly 3 years later, that the medal is gone. And I feel responsible.
Well, obviously, you know, the blame is on the people who stole it, but it's something that still affects you.
Absolutely. It still affects me. Like, any time, like, the medal was worn by me, by my mother first, and then by me for family occasions. And every time there is an occasion, every time Waterford go out and play a match, I say I should be wearing the medal today because Daddy would have loved me to wear the medal. And it still affects me.
And when did he pass away?
He passed away in 1986.
So for family occasions, to include him in the family occasion and to remember him and his great achievement,
the medal would be worn to include him with us because GAA was so precious to him and Waterford hurling was huge for him.
And a massive source of pride to the family, obviously. I mean, do you remember the medal being taken out and the story retold about blow by blow, the match on the day?
Well, no, my father was a very modest person, but he didn't blow his own personal achievement. It was the county achievement. He was a very, very, very modest about the fact that he would have won, have an All-Ireland hurling medal. But he was proud of it, very proud of it.
Right. Did anyone else ever tell you about how he won it on the day or the role he played?
Yeah, no, they didn't. Like, it's archives, really, we would be looking at. We had done, as a family, we had done something back at COVID time. We were researching all about Waterford hurling. And we gathered newspaper articles and that, and we put a thing together for the family. And fortunately, at that stage, I had got the medal professionally photographed, and that's all I have left.
Now, for the record, Waterford beat Dublin 6-7 to 4-2 in the final that day. But, I mean, after the burglary, who was the first family member that you rang to tell them that the medal was gone?
I rang my brothers particularly. I'm very emotional still about it. I had to ring my brothers, my two brothers and my two sisters, and tell them that the medal was gone. The guards had advised me to go public, so I just felt I had to tell them first. And the minute I said my jewellery was taken, they said, the medal. Everyone said, where's the medal? And that. So it was precious to all of us. And still is.
And did you end up making the public appeal to try and get it back?
We did. We did a public appeal on Facebook. We did it through all media sources. We did it through radio. But we've got no trace of it, no trace of it at all.
And what was the family reaction when they heard that the medal was gone?
Oh, they were all devastated. They were all devastated. They were all very, very nice to me, reassured me that it could have been their house. Mm. You know, I shouldn't feel responsible for it. But it still sits with you. Had I worn the medal that day? Had I not left the medal with the other jewellery? It still sits with you.
And do you still run at all those questions over in your head of, you know, going
absolutely.
Back over it and what you
absolutely.
Might have done differently?
Absolutely, absolutely. If I leave the house to go and come back in on my own, I'm kind of in trepidation of coming in. Has somebody been in? My house wasn't ransacked. There was minimal damage done, but it would still make me nervous coming back into the house if I have left it just for an hour and you're coming in the dark in the evening.
So
afraid that you come in and find that somebody has been in again.
Also, the years later, you're still feeling the guilt over the loss
Absolutely.
Of this and the vulnerability of having your home violated. Let's I suppose, use the word that's appropriate to the situation.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You're still feeling vulnerable that somebody may come into your home, and you can put up your cameras, you can put up all the things that you want, the alarms, everything. It's when they come in, what they take, and what it has meant to you. You cannot replace that, and you cannot get away from the anxiety you feel over it.
And is it still a topic of discussion in your family, you know, the missing medal?
It would be. And they'd say, like, pity we don't have the medal, or any sign of the medal. I'd meet people that know me just barely, and they'll say, did you ever get that medal? You know, and
it's a bit of a stab, I'd say, every time it comes up, is it?
Well, it's not. People are kind. They're not trying to be.
No, but I mean your own feelings on it.
You feel it. Yeah, it just renews it every time the medal is gone, and it was in my care. So I do feel responsible.
And when you hear the association president of the Irish Prison Officers Association, Tony Power, told at the conference in Galway that anyone serving less than 8 months for a non-violent crime is getting temporary release. I mean, the description of burglary as a non-violent crime and people getting temporary release. What's your take on that?
Well, I think the custodial sentences are the only thing that might stop this type of crime and other crime from happening. I don't get it. I don't get that a burglary is non-violent. It is violent that somebody's personal space has been invaded. That is a violence on the person.
All right, well, mind yourself, Siún.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thank you.
And thanks for calling.
1948 Waterford medal. If anybody comes across it, I'm still looking for it.
All right. If you want to send us in the photo, do.
We will. Yeah. Yeah. I'll send it in to you.
Okay. Thanks a million, Siún.
All right. Thank you very much.
We're back in a minute.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Colm O'Mungine here, 087 484 8888 for your WhatsApps, 51551 for your texts. We were talking to Fidelma earlier, who was rightly annoyed about the number of people who have been released on temporary release when she, as a victim of burglary, says that she feels she's not, people, victims of burglary are not getting justice if people are being released for non-violent crimes when she felt very violated with her house being broken into. We've heard from several callers since Fidelma called into us. Geraldine Mooney, good afternoon to you.
Hello, how are you?
You're in the same boat.
Same boat. I just was out doing a little bit of garden. I just popped in, but I just rang up because my story, everything like that lady said, you definitely do feel violated. It's horrendous, really. But my story basically is two engagement rings. Anyway, we got married. We built a house. Basically, I'll just tell the basic story of it. Got married, spent 5 years building a house in the countryside, and you're just young or whatever, and my jewellery box, I was working. I left my jewellery box with my engagement ring in it and came home. The whole house was broken into. That was broken into the house, and you know, everything wrecked and looked too odd. But the biggest thing anyway was my jewellery box was gone.
The whole box.
Now, with my engagement ring in it, left my engagement. I had my wedding ring on me, and we were only married a few years at the time. And the engagement was the biggest thing to me. That was gone. There was other things gone.
But what kind of a ring was it?
My engagement ring.
What did it look, three stone?
3 stone, like, you can just imagine. I was absolutely devastated.
Do you remember the day you got it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, up Grafton Street. A place up Grafton Street, up the stairs. It was upstairs in Grafton, kind of a private place. It was a kind of, I can see it even, like, and a lot of stuff, actually, in that place, that particular place, my husband had bought me, and how dear, expensive gold is. Lovely chain and bracelet. And there was actually my mother. I lost my mother young as a teenager, and my father had bought me a few years after for my 21st a watch, and it was all engraved on the back from my father. So there was just, like, as everybody said, everybody has their story, But with me, the funniest thing of the whole lot, like, there was other things in it, like, as I said, my father's, the watch.
And did the watch go as well, and the bits and pieces
everything
of bracelets and everything that had been bought over
the
years, gone?
Yeah, they basically just took the jewellery box up, just took it out. But funny story about that, because I'm going to move on well, because I'd lost 2 engagement rings, 2 robberies.
Two.
Anyway,
same marriage, 2 rings.
Same marriage, we're still married, 2 different rings, but I have to tell you the funny story about the other ring. But anyway, just about that little part, how innocent you are, like, about a year after, they came down from Dublin anyway, and there was 1 or 2 other houses robbed at the time, not as big as us. But anyway, the farmer, about a year after, when the grass must have been, he was cutting the grass, he comes up the driveway with my jewellery box, and like how silly you are. I thought, oh my God, my jewellery, But the whole thing was emptied. It was gone, and they probably had thrown it into the field, we'd say, on the way. Do you know what I mean? Took the stuff out and obviously just threw it in the field. But the fact, because everyone in the area knew what happened the year before, and he brought it in. But the funny thing was, we'd been in Rome the year after we were married, and we had got these, just funny about Rome and the Pope. We got these anyway, two rosary beads, and they were in little pouches, and we got them in the Vatican. They were in it. Of course, they weren't interested in them. We got them.
Maybe they were superstitious about stealing them.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I have those to this day. And moving forward, devastated.
The second engagement ring.
The second engagement ring. We moved out of the house because I'm a townie. We moved for other reasons, but that I have to say, them breaking in. And what happened, and all that had a massive effect on me, even living in the house, because
you kind of fell out of love with the house after that, did you?
Yeah, well, there was probably other things as well, if I'm being honest, but it had a big impact.
Sure, it was
on
one of the factors. Go on, yeah.
Absolutely, because I remember my husband, people can relate to this, that's going to hear, that was robbed. Like, when my husband used to go out on Saturday morning, I'd work 5 days a week, he'd work 6 days a week. I would not lie in the bed. I was terrified. I was terrified of being in bed, and they're going to come back. In when I was in bed, I felt very vulnerable. It's the word I'd use. I think a lot of people could relate to that. I would never lie in the bed. I'd always get up on Saturday morning, and I just felt very vulnerable when he wouldn't be around. But, like, anyway, we moved. We moved back into town. Long story short, this is the funny part. Well, it's not funny. But we moved back into town, and we got on with our lives. Because of other reasons, not just because of that, if I'm being honest. But we moved back in, and I always said to David, my husband, someday I want another engagement ring. So we moved on as life moved on. We 2 children. Life moves on. Came to our 25th wedding anniversary. And coming up to it, I says to David, I always wanted another engagement ring. And I said,
this is the year for it.
Anyway, so it was very funny because it was a totally different situation with the children. The local jewellers in Navan, I was just saying to your researcher there, I live in Navan, and friends of mine now know me well, this whole story, and my family. My sister was devastated for me. But anyway,
go on, yeah.
We went into town in Navan, cutting short. We paid off it. It was all totally different. You have a family and you've moved on. But anyway, I was so excited. Paid off the engagement ring, and it was so funny because I was a long time before I had my children, if I'm being honest. So my youngest was very young, even when I was 25 years married, and I remember him. I always remember that in the jewellers, him standing in the middle of us. and me giving it, you know, and the girls were so excited, you know, I was telling them the story and it paid off. It got as near as I could.
And was it another three-stone ring?
Another three-stone ring. And they were just all excited for me as well. And, you know, we got married in January, and I remember, Dave, we got the ring in. I put on the ring at Christmas. I couldn't even wait for my 25th wedding anniversary. And I remember the local priest even blessing it below in the chapel. I feel very even emotional talking about it. I absolutely loved it. And it was just such a funny story with the children involved. And
how long did you have it for?
I had it for, I'd say about maybe about 5 years, 5 or 6 years, and I absolutely loved it. And again, I left it on a shelf. But as my sister, look, long story short again, I left it on the shelf in the house and I went out. We were in town. Now, this time was totally different. It was, we were back living in town where I'm still living. The house is broken, never broke into ever. And the house was broken into and the ring, obviously, and a few other things. Jewelry box gone again. And my sister, my eldest sister, Dolores, which I adore, she always, from I was 21, she always bought me a jewellery box. Every time, even when the one was robbed, that jewellery box, she always replaced every jewellery box, you know, along the years. I can't explain it to you.
Sure.
And anyway, jewellery box and all was whipped away. The same story again, gone.
And the ring that was on the shelf, gone as well.
The ring was on the shelf, and my jewellery box with all the little bits and pieces I picked up over the years. They just picked it up, but they seen the ring on the shelf, and it was gone. In the middle of the day, at 3 o'clock in the day, if you seen where we lived, you would not believe it. I'll tell you one thing, they do not care. They would come in and knock the door and walk by you. It's gone that bad. It really is gone.
And how long
so
ago
bad.
Was that?
Gosh, we're married 46 years.
Right. So yeah, 4 years' time, you're due another one.
We were married about 30, 31 years at the time.
Right. But you're due another one for your 50th, are you?
Well, that's another story. I don't know. But would you believe me, to this day, I'd still love to have another one. But I remember my sister. She was so upset. And I kept saying it was my fault. It was my fault. Why did I leave it there? Why did we leave it there? And she's such a gentle, lovely person. I've never seen her so mad. She said, Geraldine, she said to me, how dare they come into your house?
And
you
was anyone ever caught for it?
No.
For either one?
No.
Right.
It's just, you know, I think that more or less we were told to just break down the stuff or whatever they do. They've no, they don't care. It's just, I was devastated. I think it was even more devastated after the second ring than the first one. I said, how could this happen to me again?
Mm. It's still with you anyway.
Yeah, it's just like, oh no, it never leaves. As that lady said there before you, like it never leaves you. You can never replay it. You know, the memories that just, I used to love putting it on me and, you know, it was older and it was just having that ring, you know, on the 25th wedding anniversary and just the whole thing and the children at the time and it was just so exciting at the time and so unusual to get the ring after, for my 25th wedding anniversary.
And we have Margaret on the other line there. Margaret, you were robbed when you were out at Mass.
Sorry, yeah. Hello.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I was burgled on the 21st September last year and then I was burgled again on the 8th of February this year. And the reason why I'm ringing in, I'm very mad to hear that they're getting out of prison. They've only just gone in and opened the door and go out again, which it means they don't mind what they do now because they won't spend any time in prison unless they do a violent crime.
And was it your house that was burgled, Margaret?
Yeah, I was just out for about an hour. When I came back, I saw the porch door open and then went in and I saw, because I always lock my other doors before I go to Mass or if I want to go out. And when I saw the front room open and all the stuff on the floor, I just knew, and then I began to shake and I thought they could be upstairs. So, and then the daughter came and they rang for the paramedics and they said that I'd have to go to hospital because I was in shock and that.
Did you come into the house, see it had been robbed and then leave again and ring your daughter? Did you step out of the house to ring your daughter and stay outside until she'd arrived?
No, I have lovely neighbours where I live and I went over to my neighbour and to see if she had a camera, did she see anything? And she came over to my house and then the daughter arrived and her husband and they called down for the ambulance and that, and because I had a pain in my chest. I spent a week in hospital, that 6 days in hospital that time. And then on the 8th of February this year, they came out and broke a different window and broke all the doors because every door was locked and the keys weren't in the doors this time. They were locked the last time, but I'd taken the keys out. But this time I took the keys out and they couldn't get in, you see, so
they smashed the doors.
Forced the doors in, yeah. And they did a lot of damage to the doors and that. And then there was no money in the house because once they got the money the first time and the jewellery, wedding ring, engagement ring and watch and all that, you know, and necklace, there was nothing in the house. So they thought then she might have a bag with her because on my way out, I thought I saw somebody following, but, you know, when something happens, you think you might be paranoid, you know. But I turned into the churchyard and the car turned into the churchyard after me. My instinct said, follow that car because it's going back to your house. But I didn't.
And what gave you that feeling, Margaret? I mean, you think it might be, you know, just paranoia, but something gave you a wrong feeling anyway about the car, was it?
Yeah, I felt that this car is following me, you know.
Right.
And then I thought, well, if it comes in here, they are following me. And it came in and parked a little bit in front of me and looked in at me. And like it looked like a 16 or 17-year-old boy on the passenger seat. And then they drove out at a speed and back up to my house and broke in. And then when they got nothing in the house, they thought, well, I saw her with a bag, you know. So she could have money in that bag, you know. So they waited in the car till I came home. And I was sitting in my car and in my own drive and I saw the fella going past the window of the back and then all of a sudden he opened the car door and took the bag out.
You must have got an awful fright.
Oh, got an awful shock, but as I said to the guards, I don't seem to be shocked as much this time, but the shock didn't affect me until a few days later. On Monday I got the terrible scare, you know, then.
And when you say, you know, the shock hit you, what's that like? What's that feeling like when I suppose, what had happened?
The shock of what happened hit you? My hands and all were shaking and I began to get very angry then on the Monday, so I rang the guard to see. And the guards were very good to me. They took no time at all to come, you know, to take the statement and all that. But it wasn't anything to, because I had nothing for them to go on. Like I had no car number or red, you know, or anything like that.
Yeah. And what was in the bag, Margaret?
I had some money in the bag that time. They took money the first time, but there wasn't much in the bag, you know.
Was there driver's license or cards or anything like
passport,
that? Passport, right.
And, yeah, so they thought, they must have thought on the way up when they got into the car to throw the passport out the window because somebody 2 miles up the road found the passport and took it up to the guard station in where I live and they brought it down to me.
And how much money had they taken the first time round?
Quite a substantial fee. Took, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to buy the solar panels.
Oh, I do. Yeah, we were hearing about that yesterday. People who were applying for solar panels.
Yeah, and I was having the money for that, but anyway, they took whatever I had in the house and destroyed most things in the house, and I haven't even got back to. Been, you know, tidying up completely. Okay, the doctor.
Did the insurance repair for all the doors and everything in it, or was it with a lot of money?
No,
a lot of money to repair all of that.
No, the first time they came, they didn't break the doors in because the keys were in the doors.
Right.
But the second time, no, I didn't claim off the insurance for the second time. I didn't because they'd broken the doors and that, but there was no one in the house or they'd wrecked a few things upstairs and that and everything was pulled asunder. But apart from that, it was just breaking in the second time, breaking the window. It broke the window in a different room.
And you never recovered anything?
No, never. Only the passports, all the bag and everything was gone. And
okay.
The daughter took me up the road to see if you could see. Sometimes you throw the bag out the window, you know.
All right,
Margaret. I don't know.
Well, mind yourself. I hope, you know, I hope in time you'll get over it because it's only been, as you say, February since the last break-in. So do mind yourself.
Yeah, all right.
All
thanks very much.
Thanks for calling. All
Thank
right,
you.
We'll take a
Thank
break.
You.
Back
Bye.
In a minute.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Susan, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
You were listening to Martin there yesterday on his difficulty with drawing down his SEAI grant because of the person who installed his solar panels wasn't registered with Safe Electric Ireland. You also have had difficulties getting your grant. Tell us what happened.
In my case now, it was different to Martin in that I had a company, the first company. It was all organised that they would come. I had a lot of preparation to do, engineers coming to the house, and I had to borrow. I was getting a credit union borrowing for the solar panels. So,
do you mind telling us how much?
Preparation. It was eight and a half thousand.
Okay.
Yeah. So the whole thing, there was a lot involved. I gave the deposit before Christmas, and the solar panels were due in March. So on the day they came to put them in, the people who were to put them in looked at the roof and said, "We're not going up there." So they packed up and went away. And I couldn't believe that the preparation and everything that went into it, that they just decided on the day that they weren't doing it. So anyway, they gave me back the money, that company, the first company.
And this company, the first company, they gave back you the money that you had paid to them. But
yes,
they had filled out your application to the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland and had filed all of that paperwork so that you would be able to get a grant for the work they had done, but that work wasn't done because they declined to go up on your roof and install for whatever reason.
Yes, that's right. So when I went to get another company to do it, the second company, they asked me to check, to register. And I went into the SCAI, and I saw my name on the register. So I got in touch with them and I told them, yeah, I'm on the register. So they went ahead, everything went ahead with it and they did it. But when I went to get the grant, the SEAI said my name was with the first company, not with the second company on the register. And as such, I wasn't entitled to the grant. I appealed it, and because I was told by the second company I should appeal it, which I did. But they very quickly came back. I don't even consider, I was disappointed actually with the appeal, because I thought, what's the point in having an appeal system if, you know, it seemed obvious to me that I was entitled to the grant. I also had emails from the first company to say that it wouldn't affect. When I wrote to them, I said I hoped that it wouldn't affect the grant.
So company number one, let's call them, had filled out your grant application. They'd sent it into the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland, and that was on the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland system. Company number one decides they're not going to do the work, and you have to source company number two. Company number two says they're not going to fill up the grant application. That's up to you to do. You go on the SEAI website. You see there's an application already there in train, and you say, that's grand. The paperwork is done. I will try to amend this existing application. And you'd been advised by company number one not to cancel your first application because the amount of the grant you could draw down would change if you had done the later application in time with company two. So I see from the correspondence you've sent us that company one advised you strongly, in their own words, not to cancel the first application, but to contact the SEAI to amend that grant application. In the event, though, the SEAI said, you should have cancelled the first application and filled out a second application. That's the issue you were appealing, is it?
Yes, that's what I was saying. In so many ways, like, I don't feel they take into consideration the fact that I'm not used to doing things on the computer, online. I'm not too, it takes a good effort, and it's not that easy to do these things and to know these things.
And you so found the companies one and two on the SEAI website, as you're advised to do. Is that the case?
Well, I there was a caller to the door for the first company.
All right, okay.
Calling to promoting their company. And I did listen to the whole thing and actually had my son with me at that time.
Right.
And we went through.
But we've checked. Both companies are on the SEAI portal. They are approved to carry out this. Now, you've been in touch. You've got correspondence from the SEAI. It said, we note that in your correspondence, this is what the SEAI said to you, you advised that Company One created your application for you. This is in breach of the terms and conditions of the programme, and this contractor should have been aware of that. But when we inquired of the SEAI and asked who's responsible for the paperwork being submitted in an SEAI solar PV grant application, could an installation company fill this out on the customer's behalf? The SEAI replied, paperwork for solar PV grant application is completed by the installer and the BER assessor. There seems to be a bit of a contradiction between those things.
Yes, they were very emphatic with me, the SEAI, that it was the not the installer, but it was the householder that had to fill out these forms and had to do it themselves. They were very emphatic about that.
And it says on their website, for people who are applying, it says the SEAI will provide you your chosen solar PV company with the necessary grant documents, which they will fill out and return to the SEAI when your solar PV installation is complete.
Yes. I mean, I really feel that I should have got the grant. I was out of pocket.
By how much?
As a result of not getting the grant.
By around 2,000 euro, is it?
Yeah, okay. Almost 2,000, yeah.
Okay, well, we've had other calls on this, but I'm afraid, Susan, that's all we have time for today, and thanks for raising it with us. We'll have to take another break. We're back in a minute.